So I want to move on now and talk about management of patients without targetable lesions, wild-type disease, starting out talking about first-line therapy. And Kevin, we've been asking these kinds of questions ever since checkpoint inhibitors came on the scene, which actually wasn't that long ago. Kevin, you see that there are some faculty members who, even with a high PD-L1 level, are inclined in general, including, well, you, or at least in terms of consideration, will consider using chemotherapy. We hear a lot about looking at the symptom status of the patient, the age of the patient. How do you approach these patients, Kevin?
So, you know, I think in general, there are two options for patients with PD-L1, 50% or more, single agent pembro or a combination of chemo plus pembro, followed by pembro pemetrexed maintenance. I think the issue of which one is better is unsettled at the present time, the way I understand. So in general, if patients are elderly, they have toxicities, comorbidities, renal dysfunction, not ideal candidates for chemotherapy, I think in my opinion, those are ideally suited for single-agent pembrolizumab. All other patients, I give combination chemotherapy with immunotherapy, regardless of PD-L1 expression. That's our approach.
So Haas, I'm curious, are there situations where you use other combinations, particularly involving a taxane? And the one situation I wonder about is patients with compromised renal function. But in general, how do you decide upon the chemo, Haas?
So histology obviously comes into effect. If you're talking about the non-squams, obviously we would like to use pemetrexed-based regimens just because of the tolerability issues. But you're absolutely right. If somebody has a compromised renal function, then the use of pemetrexed is not possible. I think if you go by guidelines, if the creatinine clearance is less than 42, 43, you're not supposed to use pemetrexed. So in that setting, my preference has been to use paclitaxel, although nab-paclitaxel also has gained a lot of popularity among some of my colleagues here. But in general, I prefer to use a carboplatin, paclitaxel, and pembro sort of approach if I cannot use a pemetrexed-based approach.
Julie, can you reflect a little bit on your thoughts about this question? And what are the situations, for example, does it matter to you how far above 50% the PD-L1 level is? Do you treat somebody differently or approach someone differently if they're in the 90% range, for example?
There is data out of the groups in Boston that showed the higher the PD-L1 and the fact that the majority of the response, at least in some of their data sets, is in those patients with extremely high PD-L1. But for myself in general practice, if you're above 50 and I feel that you can tolerate single agent immunotherapy and I don't need a significant response rate, I will use single agent pembrolizumab.
Any data on time to response, Julie, in terms of when you add a checkpoint inhibitor or checkpoint inhibitor alone versus combined with chemotherapy? You know, I guess a lot of people think that chemotherapy works faster. What do we know about speed of response with IO?
If you look at the data from single agent IO versus chemotherapy, the time to response is the same. It's within the first two cycles. So I think you can bring more patients into having a response by adding the chemotherapy to the immunotherapy. But I think the time to response, at least based on single agent IO data, it's very similar to chemotherapy.
So, Eddie, I think one of the most common, if not the most common question I got from these general medical oncologists related to duration of therapy. It's really amazing to hear general oncologists say, you know, I've got these people that are out 2 years with metastatic, just that, starting a sentence like that is impressive enough as it is. But first of all, Eddie, what do we know about, you know, and we're seeing more and more data now in longer term follow-up of these patients about 5-year survival, the possibility of cure. And how do you approach? I see that in general, you're using indefinite therapy. Others are stopping. What are your thoughts about that, Eddie?
Yeah, so one thing is that unlike our colleagues in melanoma, a complete clinical response is very rare in non-small cell lung cancer. So although the question is fair, we rarely see this. What we generally see is a partial response radiographically. And my sort of initial entrance into this area was with the KEYNOTE-001 study. That study treated forever. And in fact, most of my clinics, I still see somebody who's from the 001 study. We actually rolled them over and now have switched them. Now it'll be less true because we've switched them to the every 6-week dosing very recently. But the main thing that gives me pause is the CheckMate 153 study. It is very difficult to evaluate a duration of response. And the CheckMate 153 study, to me, is maybe one of the best data sets you'll ever get on this. Patients who were doing well were randomized at 1 year to continue beyond that year or to stop after a year. And there was a very clear difference with respect at least to progression-free survival in favor of continuing. And in fact, the people who progressed after it stopped and then resumed generally didn't do very well. And so the pembrolizumab program has generally made 2 years their cut point. And some people say, well, 1 year wasn't enough, 2 years is enough. But to me, the sort of natural extrapolation of indefinite being better than 1 year is not 2 years must be the right number.
So, Haas, Eddie referred to the recent approval of pembrolizumab at a 6-week interval. And I'm curious, when I saw that, I was kind of thinking, like, particularly with COVID going on, but just in general, I sort of figured everybody was just going to do it. Is that the case? Are you switching over or thinking about it?
Well, we've switched some of our patients, but that is pretty much in response to the COVID situation and the fact that we don't want to have patients around traveling, sitting in waiting room areas, sitting in the infusion room areas. So I think the approval was well received because we are dealing with all of these issues related to COVID. Do I like every 6 weeks? I mean, it's more convenient for the patients. The data seems to suggest that toxicity and efficacy is really no different than the traditional every 3-week administration of the drug. So it does make sense for patients to come in less often. Do I think that we would have gone to this as quickly as we have if it weren't for COVID? I think some of us would have been probably a little bit more hesitant to switch all of our patients to this. Case in point, I have somebody that I'm a little bit nervous about, and I like to see the patient every 3 weeks just because he's dealing with issues that I'm not sure are really toxicities or related to something else. So in that patient, I might not be as comfortable saying, okay, come back in 6 weeks, might want to see that patient in 3 weeks. But in majority of the ones who are, you know, year and a half on treatment and doing well and are reliable patients in terms of calling if there is something going on, I think switching to a 6-week regimen actually makes sense.
You know, it's interesting, Julie, because I kind of figured everybody was just going to be like, okay, let's do it. And, you know, Haas's answer too made me think that not everybody's all that, you know, yes, COVID and all that, but I feel like there's some kind of hesitation. Maybe people want to wait or whatever. Do you feel that, Julie, or are you ready to go?
I think for those patients who are just starting out, I don't feel comfortable doing every 6 weeks, just in the fact that if patients are going to get toxicities, it's going to tend to be in the first couple of months. So I would, even if I'm doing every 6-week infusions of pembrolizumab, I would want to at least have some type of early or mid-cycle toxicity assessment. Now, we're all getting very good at doing video conferencing, but trying to figure out different ways to be able to catch toxicities earlier while patients are remote, that would be helpful. But that's part of the reason why, at least up front, I'd feel more comfortable with more often infusions, since I'm going to bring those patients back anyway at 3 weeks. But if someone's doing well for a long period of time, even just beyond 6 months, I would feel comfortable going to every 6-week infusions. And I think that really is the advantage to that from a patient standpoint.
So another issue that I've heard questions about, Eddie, relates to maintenance and the question of, do you need to continue both drugs? And maybe you can comment, and of course, I'm talking about carbo-pem and pem. Can you talk a little bit about how you approach that decision?
Sure. It's interesting. There's data from Flatiron databases now that say that a large percentage of physicians are not giving the pemetrexed in the maintenance. My feeling is that you conduct a study to answer a question. And there was one regimen that was tested against another regimen, and that regimen showed almost unprecedented superiority with a hazard ratio for survival at the initial readout that was hazard ratio less than 0.5, which was really incredible. I've tended to stick very closely to the regimen in my own practice. The one place where I think you could make a strong argument to say particularly dropping the pemetrexed, would be if you went into this trying to decide in someone, for instance, with high PD-L1 expression, that you were sort of on the fence between adding the chemo or not adding the chemo based on your feeling that you needed to get a quick response. I can certainly imagine under those circumstances, dropping the pemetrexed during maintenance, saying I just wanted that chemotherapy up front in order to sort of take my best chance of controlling disease at the beginning. But outside of that, particularly in patients with low or no PD-L1 expression, the data with single agent PD-1 inhibitors in general hasn't been as great as we want, certainly. And so I'm not confident we can achieve the same things by just continuing the pembrolizumab in that setting.